You may have heard this idea that we only use about 10% of our brains. Well, that is 100% false. Our brains are constantly active, reasoning, planning, sensing, and it turns out our brains actually have limits. In fact, our next guests argue our brains may have reached their limits, and it has nothing to do with age. Humans are simply processing a lot more information these days. But there are ways we can use our bodies to help strengthen our mind's ability to hold information. Annie Murphy-Paul writes about this in her new book, The Extended Mind, The Power of Thinking Outside the Brain. She joins us with neuroscientist Peter Reiner, a professor of psychiatry at the University of British Columbia. Welcome to you both.
It's good to be here.
Thanks very much.
For so many of us, myself included, the drive to do more has felt more pronounced during this pandemic. And maybe it's because the lines between home and work are blurred. But Annie, you say we've been putting more demands on our brains for quite a while, over the past quarter century. How so?
That's right. And I think you could even take it back further to the beginning of this, of the previous century, the 20th century, when everyday life started to become more cognitively challenging. The things we had to do in our daily lives became less grounded in physical, concrete things and more about abstract concepts. And that trend just kept getting more and more pronounced over the course of the 20th century. And then, of course, over the last 20 or 25 years, along with the dominance that the internet has assumed in our lives and digital technology has assumed in our lives, that has gone into overdrive. We're not imagining things. We really are being asked to do much more with our brains now than ever before.
Peter, you actually published a study in 2016 that said our brains have reached near full capacity after decades of responding to the stress we put on them. Why now are our brains saying enough, essentially?
Well, I think it's really just a matter of biology that we've been on this trajectory for quite a number of years. And at some point, you can exercise muscles to a certain degree, but then at some point, you're at the physical capacity of muscles. And I think that it's a reasonable analogy with our brains, that we're at the point where we're using them pretty much at the limits of what they're capable of doing. Although I have to say that there may be some ways to tweak the system, but so far we haven't been able to move that needle very well.
Well, let's get right down to it, though. What does this mean for us as we move through? I mean, if our brains are now at near full capacity, we've always been taught that we have limitless power when it comes to our brains. What are the ramifications of this, Annie?
We're always hearing about how extraordinary the human brain is, how astonishing, how it's the most complex structure in the universe. And then at the same time, we know that our own brains fail us, you know, not infrequently. We can't remember things, or we can't focus or pay attention or stay motivated. And as our culture has become so complex and so demanding, we're really having to reach outside the brain to get things done. We really can't rely on the brain alone. We have to be drawing in what you could call extra neural resources, that is outside the brain resources, to think as well as we need to do.
Like what? Give us an example. What do you mean by that?
The sensations of our bodies, the movements of our bodies, the gestures of our hands, all these things can be drawn into the thinking process. Thinking is actually a kind of full body activity. If you pay attention to the inner cues of the body, and if you utilize its ability to move through space and to complement our verbal expression with the gestures of our hands, we can actually think more intelligently by bringing the body into the picture.
Physical activity. Are you also saying that that plays a huge part? You talked about the movement of hands, but does physical activity in other ways also help make up for the limits that we're experiencing in our brains?
It does, Tanya, in a whole variety of ways. I mean, more vigorous activity, which this is the purpose of recess, right? Every teacher knows that students who've had a chance to run and play and get out their physical energy come back to the classroom more attentive, more focused. And yet, you know, again, there's been this emphasis on seat time, on the idea that students should be spending as much time as possible sitting, learning. And that really leaves out the role of physical activity in promoting effective thinking.
So what I'm also hearing from you is that trying to process more information is not the way to do it. For instance, I have 6 books I need to read. You're saying instead of doing that, maybe I should get outside and work out or something.
That it would definitely help if you did that in nature. You know, I write in the book about how the kind of information, the kind of sensory information that we encounter in nature is especially well suited to restoring our attention. You know, we think so much about how to direct our attention and how to spend our attention, but we don't think so much about how to refill the tank. And it turns out that spending time in nature is one of the best ways to do that. So I would definitely encourage a walk or a run outside in nature.
So I'd like to interject one more thing there, which is that remembering what went on in all six books is really not what your brain is designed to do. And in fact, going back to this idea of, you know, using your brain wisely, we've come to a place where really the idea of the best use of your brain is not necessarily harnessing all that information and storing it, but knowing how to find it, knowing how to manipulate it, and understanding the concepts that are there. And that is kind of a new thing in the world. Certainly the availability of the vast repository of information on the internet at our fingertips 24/7 allows for just that situation, but we make the mistake of when we try to stuff it all inside our biological brains.
Mm. We try to do too much in our heads in general, I would say. And Tanya, when you're thinking of those six books you have to read, I wonder if there's a way that some of that could be downloaded, offloaded from your mind onto, say, post-it notes or a whiteboard. You know, the more you can get the contents of your brain out into physical space where you can move around it, you can move it around when we're talking about post-it notes, you can navigate through it as if it's a physical landscape. Those are human strengths that we can't take advantage of when we keep it all locked inside our head.
What does all this mean? How should we interpret the information that you're sharing with us? I'll start with you, Peter.
I want to say that it's not really all bad news, recognizing that our biological brains are working kind of at their limits, because as Annie's book really lays out in a wonderful way, there is this concept of extending our cognitive abilities outside of our brains and doing some cognitive offloading of perhaps things that are relatively trivial, like remembering a phone number or an address or something like that, that is not a great use of this fantastic 3-pound organ between our ears. And that affords an opportunity that is yet a little bit unrealized, which is that we can do things better. And what we really need is kind of a systematic program to teach children and adults effective ways to manage this cognitive offloading so that our brains are freed up for more interesting tasks that they can really do extremely well, like creativity, analytic thinking, things like that.
I'm really taken by you using the phrase, we can free up our brains. Annie, what's the takeaway you want folks to take from what you're telling us?
Yes. You know, we live in such a brain-bound, such a neurocentric society that's really so focused on the brain. And I think that limits us because we have this idea that the way to think well is just to push harder, you know, to apply some grit or some growth mindset. These are some really popular ideas out there. And as Peter is saying, really our best shot for thinking more intelligently at this point is to reach beyond the brain, to pull in these extra neural resources, which include not only the body, but also the physical spaces in which we learn and work, our relationships with other people, and our devices. And we've cultivated the use of the brain to such an extent that we've really overlooked all the ways that we could be learning to think outside the brain, to use these extra neural resources. And as Peter said, I think we could use a much more systematic and organized approach to cultivating that other way of being smart.
That's science writer Annie Murphy Paul, author of the new book, The Extended Mind, The Power of Thinking Outside the Brain, and Peter Reiner, a neuroscientist at the University of British Columbia. Thanks to you both.
Oh, thanks for having us on,
Tanya.
This is great.
Thank you very much.